And the parent expects to recover the carrying amount by the asset inside by selling the shares in the subsidiary. The Interpretations Committee discussed the issue at three meetings and noted that IS 12 requires the parent to recognize both the deferred tax related to the asset inside and the deferred tax related to the shares, if tax law considers the asset inside and the shares to be two separate assets. Considering, however, the concerns raised by the commentators during the project and in particular on the tentative decision, agenda decision published in the September 2011 IFRIC update on this issue, the Interpretations Committee decided at the last of these three meetings to explore options to address this issue that would result in a different accounting for this specific type of transaction. Consequently, the staff analyzed whether the requirements in IS 12 should be amended in a limited scope project in response to the concerns raised by commentators and consulted ISB members at various meetings in December 2013 to obtain their individual views on possible amendments to the principles in IS 12. Accordingly, we analyzed the following concerns on the requirements in IS 12 that commentators raised in the course of the project. This was the first comment: recognizing deferred tax liabilities related to the asset inside will result in the recognition of liabilities that will never result in tax payments by the parents group. Next concern: the determination of the tax base should reflect management intent, because management will act in the most economically advantageous way under normal circumstances. And the third concern: distinguishing between the asset inside and the shares in the entity does not reflect the commercial substance of the investment. The asset inside and the corporate wrapper are in substance the same. In addition, we developed three approaches that would address the concerns raised. These are the approaches: expected manner of recovery, unit of account, and measurement on a discounted basis, that are included in staff paper 3A for this meeting. After analyzing the concerns raised by commentators, analyzing the proposals to amend IS 12, and consulting with ISB members, we think that the concerns raised by commentators cannot be processed in a limited scope project to amend IS 12 within the confines of the existing fundamental principles in IS 12. We think they require a wider scope ISB project. We rather recommend that the Interpretations Committee refers the concerns raised by commentators to the research project of the ISB on income taxes. Accordingly, we want to ask the following four questions to the Interpretations Committee members. First of all, do the Interpretations Committee members have any questions or comments on the background information, status of the project, or the analysis of the concerns raised? Second, does the Interpretations Committee members have any questions or comments on information and analysis presented in Staff Paper 3A? Third, does the Interpretations Committee agree with the staff recommendation that it should not take the issue onto its agenda and refer the concerns raised to the ISB's research project on income taxes? If not, what alternative do you propose? And finally, does the Interpretations Committee have any comments on proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision in Appendix B of Staff Paper 3A for this committee meeting?
I think Thomas has managed anything. It is that he has finally gotten your chairman to the point that I think I understand inside-outside basis. I remember sitting with the FASB project manager when they were doing income tax accounting and having him painfully try and explain it to me. But Thomas has managed where others have failed. Comments from committee members. Scott?
I completely agree with the staff. Nothing more.
Laurence?
I have significant concerns. Where this is going? I have significant concerns. I think, first of all, your description of fact pattern might not necessarily be accurate. In what you describe in paragraph 12, for example, 12b, parent subsidiary are two separate tax entities and five separate tax returns. I'm not sure that this is always the case. and you have not assessed the case where they don't file separate tax returns, what implication does it mean? And moreover, paragraph F on page 4, where you say, basically, and you take that case later on as well, that acquisition resales of investment properties in short term by this type of parent do occur, but they are not usual. That I would not put my hand in the fire with such a statement. I think that they can be more usual than you think. I think that the time scale when owners sell those investment properties might be shorter than what you think. So for me, these are not good reasons for not looking at the issue. I have also, in the concerns you list in paragraph 29, list three, I would add up a fourth one, which is all relating to the interactions with fair value measurements. Because how do you determine fair value? Do you consider tax effect, not tax effect, before tax effects, after tax effects? And how then does that interact with the measurement of deferred taxes? And particularly whether this is going to create day two gains and losses. This is also even more accurate when you do business combination accounting, because you end up with a deferred tax liability that creates a mechanical goodwill that has no meaning. So I think that you can pad the list of concerns where you're heading leads to not relevant information, in my view. I also believe that one area that has not been researched sufficiently is whether you should always consider that when you have an asset in a legal, wrapped up in a legal entity, that legal entity is necessarily a subsidiary. Can you have cases where you say that the substance of this legal entity, well, this legal entity has no substance, and that in effect you have an asset where, look together, you ignore the legal entity effects, and then you just apply. So if you sell the whole thing, what are the tax consequences? So it links with the unit of account questions you are investigated with some board members. But I do believe that if you have a legal entity that just carries that asset and that does nothing more, and really for tax purposes only. In some ways, we are going to discuss investment entities and entities that are created for tax optimization only. So I come back to my case. So legal entity created to hold that asset and used for tax purposes only and nothing more, no other activity. Is this a subsidiary? Does that legal entity, is it a subsidiary per se? And I would argue that looking at the substance of the things together, you might go to a different route. So I have a basic concern, a fundamental concern, to say we don't do anything. The answer is clear. You must have deferred tax liabilities at each level, one which is considered to be at the subsidiary level and then the investor level. I think in many cases this does not provide a faithful representation of economics of the transactions, so I can only disagree.
Put you down as undecided. Tony?
I understand a lot of the concerns that Laurence has, but I'm afraid if we want answers that reflect the economics, best not look in IS 12. And I think that, yes, there are concerns about how do you account for a subsidiary that only, or an entity that only owns a single entity, that go well beyond income taxes. I think Laurence pointed out a series of those questions. And there are times in which booking deferred tax in purchase accounting gives you goodwill. It does. But I think all of those things are beyond the scope of the question that we've been asked. And so my sense is that what the staff has written captures what IAS 12 actually requires at the moment. to look at the inside basis difference and the outside basis difference and account appropriately. And so I support where the staff have gone. My only comment on the proposed agenda decision is when the staff say the IS-12 requires consideration of the inside and outside basis difference, then goes on to say, furthermore, I'm not quite sure about that linkage. I think the point is this is what the standard requires. Some people have concerns about that, but that's an issue for the research project. So I just wonder if you might think about the words around the linkage, but otherwise I'm comfortable with where the staff's got to. I think it reflects what the standard requires.
Andrew?
Yes, absolutely. Let's not conflate two different questions. One question is, what does IS-12 currently require? And one question is, do we like the answer? I think the staff paper and agenda decision get to where IS-12 currently takes you. You do need to, if assumption is the right word, make the assumption that there is a subsidiary and it does hold a single asset and it does have a separate identity for tax purposes to move forward. And I think those are legitimate assumptions in the context to enable us to move forward. The question of when it's a subsidiary, not a subsidiary, is far too broad, as Tony points out, I think, for this committee on this issue. I did have a few basically fairly minor drafting suggestions I've already sent to Thomas, but I support the staff direction.
Oh, Reinhard?
I certainly understand the concerns Laurence has raised, but I completely agree that the agenda decision is consistent with what IS-12 currently says, by consequence of the fact that it focuses on the tax law, taxable entities, tax bases, and that's the consequent effect that you have the inside and outside basis differences. And so I agree with the agenda decision. Like Andrew, I had a minor suggestion in terms of wording that I sent to the staff as well.
Sandra?
I guess I would agree with Laurence's comments. I mean, I read it and thought, how do you solve this problem? But I thought the examples included, or the possible solutions, created more problems. And I was like, how do we come up with some of these numbers? We're taking the difference between a discounted and an undiscounted number and discounting it again. That doesn't seem right to me either. But, you know, there certainly is a question about relevant information for investors, but I think that investors in entities of investment properties like this understand inside-outside basis differences, and that can be explained through disclosures and other information, even, dare I say, non-GAAP measures. So I think creating other problems is a worse result, so I guess I agree with the conclusion, but it doesn't produce the most economically relevant information. In the consolidated results, but in the separate results, maybe it does.
Okay, Scott, I have you next.
Nothing more.
Oh, okay. Martin?
I agree with the concerns of Florence. However, I'm absolutely supportive to the wording of the tentative agenda decision, as I believe the project is too broad to have it as an interpretation or amendment or whatever.
Yeah. Fei Long?
I agree with this. No any further comments.
John?
I'm not sure it answers concerns with the issues that arise upon acquisition and the interaction with the initial recognition exception, the day two accounting issues, because the measurement of the asset inside may be at fair value on an ongoing basis. So I think the issue is one that's got a number of different other aspects to it that are not covered in the paper that I think will need to be addressed. But I don't disagree with the staff analysis of the requirements of IS-12.
Ronch?
Can I ask a question to Sandy? You mentioned that investors would be able to understand sort of appropriate disclosures and non-GAAP measures. At the moment in Europe, we are brainstorming because ESMA has been publishing some papers about non-GAAP measures, and there is a question about what type of non-GAAP measures inside financial statements, outside financial statements. And I kind of recall that last time in January we said no additional information in financial statements that would contradict what would be written in a standard. But you would have, so say, a measure of P&L and balance sheet restated for the effect of deferred tax liabilities that the issuer considers inappropriate outside financial statements. Is this what you would expect to see?
I would expect that if that management didn't feel like the accounting rules, because of other things, didn't explain things, that it wouldn't be unfair to explain the economics in a different way, as long as that explanation is consistent over time and that it's not sort of willy-nilly selected. I mean, if this is something that just can't be corrected without creating other issues, then I don't think that it's unreasonable for management to try and explain that to an investor in outside. I wouldn't include it in the financial statements, certainly not. But outside the financial statements, yeah. As long as it was done consistently over time, it wasn't changed all the time.
Scott, and let's wrap this up.
Further to that point, at least in the U.S., the investment property type industry, REITs and others, have sort of a commonly known non-GAAP measure, FFO, funds from operations, that it wasn't developed to deal with this, but it does give a pre-tax number and therefore would in fact get rid of what somebody might think is noise from this matter.
There is a problem with the accounting itself.
With the exception of Laurence, I see general support for the staff recommendation, which is a lateral. And Alan, just for the record, can you tell the committee about where we stand on the research project?
It's one where I quite often say it's coming, but this is don't hold your breath. There is the project, so it's on the agenda, but it's only our longer term one. We've signaled that we don't expect to do any dedicate any board time to it within the next 3 years when we came out with the agenda consultation, but we were asking others to do some work. We've actually identified two national standard setters who are willing to do some work on this. And we've identified a staff member who can actually help be the central focal point for that. But I think most people realise, if anybody's observed the work that was done by the UK board and by other boards, that this is a significant project. We have tried unsuccessfully with the FASB to try and get at least the models closer together. It's like anything, every little tweak or little change you make, it just opens up another issue and another issue. And we think we need to have a fundamental rethink, but it will be a long haul on this one.
Okay, that's what we'll do then. Thank you. Who is our next contestant?
It's Denise.
Denise.